I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, I am joined by Denny McCarthy, PGA Tour player. Denny is fresh off a career year on the PGA Tour. I think he finished 37th in the FedEx Cup. He had a top 10 at a major, a slew of other top 10s on the PGA Tour in the calendar year. Denny played golf at Virginia and just someone I've gotten to know through the years on tour and really enjoyed the conversation about improving at the PGA Tour level, his putting, which is truly world-class, league of his own putter, and then a little bit on LIV and the future of the PGA Tour. Before we get to Denny, real quick, we have a Labor Day sale going on in the Fried Egg Pro Shop. It is 15% off everything. It is automatically applied at checkout. So go in there if you're looking for some new gear, new hat, t-shirts, hoodies, layers for the fall, as well as print photography. So, you know, if you're looking to dress up your office or room in the house or wherever it may be, check out our print photography. And without further ado, here is Denny McCarthy. What's up with you? How have you been?
I've been good. I'm just back down in Florida. I live in Jupiter. After BMW, took like 5 or 6 days off and then really got back into it the last 4 or 5 days.
Are you playing Napa?
I am playing Napa, yeah. It's a place I haven't played well, but I feel like I'm just due there for a lot of good things to happen. I think I've played there 4 times, and I haven't made the cut there before. And theoretically, it should be a good place for me. My coach took a job at a place called Shooting Star in Jackson Hole this summer. Have you heard of that place?
Uh-huh.
It looks unbelievable. So he works 7 or 8 months down in Boca at Pine Tree here. And then he took this job this summer. So I'm actually going out next week to play in their pro member called the Dusty Boot. And I'm going to get some work in with him. And then I'm going to go straight from there to Napa. So
awesome.
I'm looking forward to Jackson Hole more than I am going to Napa, but it'll be a nice, it'll be nice to see him and get dialed in before I go out there.
So we'll just get into it since we're already going, but coming into this year, obviously you had the best year of your career. Do you feel different going into the season? Like, are you more excited, or is there a different mentality you feel like after, you know, falling just short of East Lake this year and having the best year of your career? Do you go into this week a little bit different?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was a little disappointed and deflated with how I kind of ended my year, but that didn't last very long. Like, honestly, a day or two after, I'm like, I'm ready to like get back into it. I'm excited where my game is at. I keep getting better every year. And I'm seeing some really nice improvements. You know, like I'm able to compete on big, hard golf courses and I can hit it well enough to where I can put myself in contention at these big places, which I can't necessarily say about my game 2 or 3 years ago. So I love that aspect. I love that I can, you know, more weeks than not, I feel like my game is ready to compete and win tournaments. What's crazy, I have such an appreciation for the top guys because so many of those guys do that every time they play, which is just like people don't understand how hard that is to do. Like some of these guys are just machines. Like they're just nonstop, always there, always playing good golf, which is incredible. It's really hard to do. And I, you know, that's kind of the next step is kind of just even when I'm not on, like even when my, you know, these guys bad, like when they don't play a great round, they still manage to somehow shoot a couple under, and then they'll come out and shoot seven under the next day when they have their stuff. So I think I'm excited because my game is at it just, I feel like I keep getting better. I've been knocking at the door a few times, and I'm just excited to put myself in contention and just keep trying to win golf tournaments. And once I get that first win, I think that'll be a nice relief where I can just kind of just freewheel it and keep going.
It seems like putting together a tournament, and at every level, you see it like at the Korn Ferry Tour level, you see it at the tour level, is there are certain guys that it's like there's almost like always nine holes where there's going to be like you're going to struggle for a period of your four rounds when you're playing well. And it's like the guys that turn 71 into 69, it, that's the big difference, right?
For sure. And usually that happens, you know, early in the week. Like there could be a stretch where you make the cut, but like, man, you really could have put yourself in a really good position by shooting three or four under or a couple under on that nine holes. Instead, you shoot a couple over when guys were, you know, say you make a bogey on an easier hole and guys are just birdieing that hole. Like you feel like you lose something for sure. I had that happen a couple times this year where I didn't really feel like I played all that bad. There are a couple times where I played a really good front nine, really clean. And then either like a three putt or just a slight change in the momentum. And I tried not to let it affect me. I feel like I did a pretty good job of it, but things like there are a couple different times where I couldn't get myself back in that rhythm that I had on the front nine. And I can't quite get the putts to fall and maybe shoot a couple over on that back nine. And it's just like, man, I was so close to getting just totally out of my own way today and totally just being locked in. And that happens. It's when you play consecutive weeks in a row and you're making the cuts and you're playing four rounds a week, like it can be easy to slip up for that little bit of time. You know, that's what the top, like I mentioned, the top guys are just machines. Like you look at like Patrick Cantlay, like when he's playing well, like he doesn't really have that many slip ups. He's literally just like laser focus. You know, I feel like he didn't even really play that great at East. Like he from what I saw, it seemed like he was just missing a lot of really good looks, but he was still like right there. Like, okay, it's fine. I missed that look, but I'm just going to give myself that's like a similar look on the next hole. And like, he just keeps doing that and doing that and doing that and like overcoming how deflating it could be. So like watching somebody like that, you can learn something, you know, like, man, this guy just doesn't let that affect him. He's totally unflappable. Like he just keeps going and going.
How much do you think of that is consistently getting yourself into those moments, like getting yourself in the mix where do you think it's so much of it is a confidence thing?
I do. Yeah. I do think that's part of it. Experience. There's a learning curve to it for sure. I also think I really like where my game and swing is. I think, at times, yeah, I tend to get a little fast, which causes a few bad tendencies to maybe creep into my swing a little bit. And it seems like some of those guys keep it really even keel, or even the guys that let it out, like say like Rom, for instance, like he's emotionally, like he likes to like get it out and then he uses it to almost fuel him. So it's like, you just got to find what works for you in those situations. For me, I think I'm pretty upbeat walker. I walk fast. Like I don't even notice it, but then like, I will watch myself on like some, a video somebody took, or if I see like a replay and I see like the clip of me, I'm like, man, I'm walking so fast. So, and I know I'm like probably breathing fast too. So for me, I think it's just staying, feel like I'm maybe moving just half a second slower here or there. Try and calm it down. I think everybody has their own kind of, you know, what's the best thing to kind of keep me in this round or keep me in the moment. Everyone has their own thing.
It's what you brought up earlier about like how sometimes it's just like a three putt takes you out of that. Like I've noticed so much with my own personal game. It's like bad tee shots almost always follow three putts. And it's just like that little unsettling in what you're saying. Like it could be just you speeding up like a half click because you're a little, you know, hot after a mistake. And that's the little thing that just gets you out of that really nice flow that you had going through the whole round, right?
For sure. And I can think of two different examples where I didn't feel like my thought process was that different, but the rounds went totally different ways. And one was the US Open, the final round. I got off to a great start, made some pars on I was 300 through five and then parred like 6, 7, 8. And I hit two really good shots on 9 and 3-putted. And I was livid because I felt like I should have shot 4 or 5 under on that 9. And I just turned in 2 under after getting off to a hot start. Like I went from like putting a lot of pressure on those guys and seeing my name into just kind of like drifting back a little. And I totally let it go. Like I got back in my mindset, like 10's a really hard hole at Brookline. And I got up and I piped a drive, smashed a 7-iron right at it and almost made the putt. And then I just continued to like string along good holes after that. I shot even on the back, but like I played the quality of golf that I played on the front 9 to shoot, you know, a couple under and put myself, you know, right there in the mix. And unfortunately, I didn't do that, but I was giving myself the looks and at least chances to do that by kind of just, and then Memphis a couple weeks ago, like same thing, final round, played great, 3-putted on 9. I was like 4-under through 7 or 8, 3-putted on 9. Hit a good 3-wood off 10, which I thought was staying short of this bunker, gets a terrible lie, skull it out, and almost make birdie. And then the next hole, 11, can be dicey. The wind was switching all over. Maybe didn't make a fully committed swing. I was just trying to hit a 9-iron in the middle of the green, pulled it a little, hit a sprinkler head and goes like over the water, like in pine straw. It was just like, I didn't feel like things changed that much. But when you go with like, then I had like a really stressful shot to try and save a bogey or double. And then it's just like, I tried to calm myself down, but it's hard to do in that time. Like you played a very stress-free front 9 and then you hit like all these, like just didn't feel like I hit that bad of shots, but then I'm like going through like a stressful 10th and 11th hole. And it's just like, it just kind of just takes you out of the nice rhythm. It's hard to like get back into, okay, fairway, green, make a putt or hit a good putt. Like it's hard to get back into that rhythm.
The US Open, great event for you, obviously shooting 68-68 on the weekend. You moved up a ton, but it was kind of part of a really good stretch of golf for you. You had that, you had the Memorial you finished 5th in, and then you had John Deere a couple weeks later that you finished 6th in. Was there a moment leading into that stretch of golf that something clicked? Like what, explain, you know, like did you just get, you know, what happened in those weeks?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like I was putting a lot of work in. I believe the stretch before that was like, it was like Wells Fargo where I played well. The weather was disgusting. Like that was my hometown event. And I put in a lot of prep and work that went into that week. Like, I got to Maryland on like Saturday. I played 9 holes, like 9 Sunday, 9 Monday, 9 Tuesday, 9 Wednesday. And I was like, even though I had played that course a bunch, like I just wanted to get really good prep in. The weather was awful on the weekend, and me being a average length hitter, it just played really super long for me. And I got Rory behind me flying it 40 behind me, and he's hitting a 9-iron in, and I'm hitting I'm like deciding between a chippy cut 4 or like a hard draw 5. And he's deciding between a full bore wedge or 9-iron. It just became a little difficult on the weekend. But that preparation and that week, that place has a lot of hard golf shots. And I was able to hit a lot of them under tournament conditions. And then it went to like, I got into the PGA as an alternate and got some good prep in there, even though I like wasn't in until Bryson pulled out on Wednesday night. And then Colonial the next week, both like Southern Hills and Colonial, both windy conditions, ball strikers, golf course. I like playing in the wind. I feel like I have good control. Just living down in South Florida, you have to be able to control your ball in those 20-mile-an-hour winds. And so I feel like I was playing some good golf, controlling my ball, just wasn't really getting that, you know, that many great scores out of it. And then we went to Memorial where it wasn't that windy. The first few days were firm, but not that firm. It was just like, finally, like I just felt like at peace. I feel like I wasn't playing in these brutal conditions where I'm hitting, you know, stingers, keeping it low. Even though I like playing that style of golf, it was just like, I don't know. It was a course that I felt like I could play well at, if I just hit the ball in the fairway, especially the way my iron game has been trending. And I was able to put together a handful of really good rounds. I putted really well the first few rounds that week. And so it's hard to say like exactly when it's going to come, but like I had been putting in some really good like prep and hard work at the tournaments leading up to that. And I don't know, I just felt kind of at ease. And it's like, I feel like once I have one of those kind of events, like I'm like, okay, my game is good. I can compete on like a big hard golf course with the top guys. And like that was a big confidence boost for me, especially going into the US Open. And obviously played well there too. I mean, that was a fun stretch of golf. It's something that I would, like I said about the top guys, like I'd like to do that more often than just popping up, you know, for, you know, a month stretch at a time and then kind of fading away. I'd like to be there more often.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously looking at your career and your game and, you know, with the stats, like contending at the Memorial, that's like a traditionally place where it's the best ball strikers. And I think, you know, obviously I'd love to hear about the incremental improvement. I don't want this to sound hyperbolic, but I, you know, when you look at your statistical profile, like you're the best putter in the world, which is, it's just a crazy, you know, like you look at it and it's like, it's nuts. How have you gone about incrementally improving your other aspects of your game without, you know, one of the things I think across life, whether any profession, if you go and try and improve something that maybe is a little bit of a weakness, sometimes your strength diminish. How have you gone about incrementally improving your ball striking without losing your talent?
Yeah, I think I've always had really good hand eye. So, you know, shooting a basketball, darts, cornhole, like ring toss, ping pong, putting, like I put all that like in the same category. Like I feel like I don't lose my hand-eye ability. Like, I feel like I can, even though I still put in a little work on my putting, but I feel like I can leave it untouched for, you know, a little bit at a time and kind of just, I come back and I have a 15, 20 minute session and I'm like, oh yeah, this is like, say I haven't putted in 4 or 5 days. I'm like, yeah, I just got my feel back and it's just like riding a bike. So like, it's nice that I don't need to like spend hours and hours in a bent over posture putting, especially since once I get on the course, my process is actually pretty simple. Like I pick spots and I line my ball up at those spots. So
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you think about speed at all?
Yes. It's factored into kind of what I'm seeing with the spot. And yes, it's factored in. People ask me that. Yes. Like, why am I such a good putter? Because I have a really good feel. My speed is really good. And I read the greens very well. That is why I putt very well most times, because I've played golf for almost 30 years. Well, I've probably played for 25 or 6 years and a lot of trial and error and reading greens and seeing things and kind of just, I've got just so much data on all the putts I've ever hit and what they look like to my eye. So I feel like I've formulated a good system for reading greens, and then I have good touch and feel where I'm kind of taking that into account when I'm picking my spots. Mm-hmm. It sounds all like very complicated, but like it's very simple when I get out on the course. Like I'm just like I've try and find spots or things that stick out to my eye that I can use in reading the putt.
Are they spots close? Are they far? Like, what is it, a mixture?
It's a mixture. I'd say more times than not, it's kind of halfway through the putt. It could be maybe, you know, 15 feet away, but more times than not, it's somewhere in the middle of the putt, whether it's a ball mark, a piece of sand, a blade, like a shade of grass, like, you know, like a, there could be like a dark shade and like a light shade. Like I'm going to go like a ball or two into that light shade of grass. Like it's just anything that kind of sticks out where I see it could potentially be going. So it sounds complicated, but if I were here showing you what I was doing, you'd be like, yeah, I mean, I get that. Like I see that spot and I kind of see like what you're talking about.
That's generally how I think about putting. But one of my biggest issues is like when I look down at the ball, sometimes I lose my spot.
Yeah, so that's why I draw the line on my ball, but I don't use the full line when I'm like have a bigger breaking. Like I'll use more of the full line closer in on less breaking putts. But once the farther I get away and the more it breaks, I actually tilt my line down. I wish I had a ball here to show you, but I do have a ball actually. Give me one sec. It's one of my hole in one balls.
Oh wow. How many hole in ones do you have?
This was one I made in the second round of the Players. It was on a shelf over here in my family room. So you can see it's not like a huge, it goes less than halfway around the ball. So farther away I get it, I'll tilt my line down. So what I'm seeing when I look over top is barely just like the end of this. So if I were putting this way, I would basically just be looking at like the top of the line like that. So I've kind of pointed it down towards my spot. But when I get over the ball, I'm not so like line obsessed. Like I'm not seeing the whole line. So I'm not like the very end of the line is kind of point. So like I'd be lining it up. That's what you would see if you were like on the hole side. But I look over it and I see that basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a little bit of the line. It's pointed at my spot. And then that way I'm not like super obsessed with the line. I know it's pointed right near the spot. And then I can kind of play with it over top. Like, okay, maybe that feels maybe a touch low. Maybe I'll mark it real quick and just like move it a little higher, or like it's pretty good. And then from there, it's all like, okay, like now I'm looking at the hole and just kind of dialing in the speed that goes with.
That line's got to help you with your body, getting your body set, right?
Correct. And this is what I do the Tiger gate drill before I find like a 5 foot putt. I put my putter down, the tees in between, and I'm lining up my ball and everything. I put an alignment stick down too. This is the only really putting drill I use, but I try and get everything pretty square. The more square everything is, the more my body's just going to want to swing on that line. I have a tendency to sometimes open my feet. I think most right-handers or most golfers tend to get open stance with their putting, which is fine. For me, that just tends. Sometimes I get a little swipey. The more open I actually get, the more I actually want to leak left to righters. So actually, like sometimes I practice a drill where it's more so for my left to righters because I have a tendency to open up and kind of leak them a little bit. So
I think everybody can relate to that.
I know it's. I mean, it's just a hard putt sometimes. I mean, it's one that you feel like you pick a high line, you got to commit to it. Sometimes you feel like it can be too high, and then like you can just like push it down, and then that's when it leaks. It's everyone can relate to it, obviously. Sometimes I feel like in practice, I like close my stance a little bit and almost feel like I'm just like covering the putt, basically. That's kind of the term I use, but when I get more square to those left righters, I feel like I can cover it more and make a better stroke on it, where I'm kind of compressing the ball more instead of kind of letting it just like come off my face. I'm actually giving it a nice compression to it. It's kind of just a couple of the terms I use.
Putting to me is fascinating. I was curious about the speed thing because I always like I feel like I've caddied enough in my life. I've played enough in my life that if I walk around the hole and I look at the putt intrinsically, I know how hard to hit the putt, right? I don't need to, you know, it's not something I need to think about. Somebody doesn't need to tell me it's uphill or downhill or it's fast. Like I always use this term. I always use this analogy is like, do you think Steph Curry comes across half court and is thinking about like, hey, I'm 37 feet away from the hole or 37 feet away from the hoop. I need to throw it this hard. Like, no, he just knows
how to shoot
the ball. Right.
Exactly. And that's, you know, what's crazy. Like he probably knows. And this is what like analogy that I would like tag along that. Like he knows if he's probably running faster and stops on a dime, you probably doesn't need to like shoot it as hard. But if you're walking and you're kind of just like, and you're walking into that shot, you probably need to use more power. But if you're going into it with like a jog, you know how like guys will be on fast break and they'll pull up from like the 3-point line. Like, I think that's a hard shot because then you're like jumping up forward and like you need to shoot it softer. But as opposed to like, if you just were just there for like a set three, somebody passed you the ball, you need a little more effort and energy. It's like it's the same kind of thing. That was a good analogy you brought up. Like, I don't know. He's not like, this is 38 feet. I need to shoot this hard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I always think about. And like I stopped thinking about speed and all of a sudden I got way better at putting because like I didn't freak myself out about like uphill, downhill. Did you play a lot of sports growing up?
I did. Yeah. I played basketball through high school. Mm-hmm. I actually have a half court sport court in my backyard that I go J it up on every now and then. It's a nice way to stay active and still like get a sweat in without like maybe going to the golf course. And if you have like a couple off weeks, like I like to just go like run around and be a crazy person out there and shoot hoops. Like something I always loved. And honestly, it was probably my first love before golf. Like I would just wish me being 5'8", that basketball was never really going to happen. I mean, maybe if I was like 6'5", it would have been a more realistic discussion, but yeah, I loved basketball. I played all the way through high school. I loved baseball too. I played pitcher and like short and third. I can throw a ball really hard. And sometimes actually when I do something stupid on the golf course, instead of now yelling a cuss word or something, I will just like crow hop off the side of the green and throw a ball into the woods really hard. which it's just like, all right, I got that out now. Now I can just go play golf again.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor, Riomar. So Riomar is back. They have been a longtime partner of the Fried Egg and the Shotgun Start, and they make wonderful shoes. They are shoes that you can dress up for occasions or dress down. They are great shoes that are super convenient. They are slip-on. They have the deck drivers, which are slip-on shoes that are perfect for when you're in a pinch, you just need a pair of shoes to throw on, but also nice shoes to wear with slacks and, you know, a button down at a business casual function. So Riomar, the thing that's unique about these shoes is that they have bearings that are customizable. They are interchangeable. So you could buy a pair of shoes in a couple different styles of bearings and change them out. And they're kind of like getting new shoes. And the one thing that I value the most about these shoes is they're the antimicrobial, I believe they call it. It basically does. They don't smell. I've had a pair for 2 years. I have another newer pair, but I have had a pair for 2 years and they do not smell at all. And I think that's something that happens with shoes that you wear without socks. So go to riomarshoes.com and use the promo code TFE for 15% off your order. That's riomarshoes.com. Use the promo code TFE and you'll get 15% off your order. Thank you, Riomar. And now back to Denny McCarthy. So you didn't specialize into golf until like college.
I mean, I knew like early in high school that I was probably going to be going to college to play golf. And I got a lot better at golf my like junior year of high school going into senior year. That's kind of when I was getting into all those AJGAs, the invitationals. I won a lot of stuff in Maryland locally. And then I took it to the AJGA stage, if you will, and was competing right away with, you know, Spieth and JT. And, I won the junior PGA that summer, which was my biggest tournament I'd ever won, against all those guys. So, and those guys were ranked, I think I touched number one in the world ranking junior wise for a week or two there. I was playing some really good golf that summer. So that's kind of the time where I knew like, yeah, I mean, I'm obviously doing this in college, and you know, that's kind of when I started thinking about this is probably what I'm going to do as a career. It's turned out pretty good so far. I haven't haven't quite kept pace with JT and Spieth. Those guys, our 2011 class is a lot of talent in that class. I'm sure. I mean, guys talk about it all the time about the 2011 class. I was kind of like on the underrated side of it, I guess, if you will. My process has taken a little bit longer than some of those other guys, but I'm still there.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things I find the most fascinating about golf versus, like, say, basketball is, like, you know, you knew LeBron was going to be, you know, one of the best players in the NBA when he was 16 years old. And I think one of the neat things about golf is that improvement and who's the best at 13 isn't necessarily going to be the best at 16, and who's the best at 18 isn't going to be the best at 23. Who's the best at 23 might not be the best who's at 30. Like, there's this nonlinear improvement. It's a sport that's incredibly hard to get better at, right?
Yes, it is. And that's why it's like this game is totally perfect for me, because if you knew me, like, I'm super competitive. Like, I'm always trying to find ways to get better at all the games I mentioned earlier, like darts, cornhole, like I came up with a new cornhole method like a couple months ago that I absolutely love. Like, you know, the pros, they like flick it in the bag, yeah, you know, spin sideways. I actually like hold it by the corner.
Oh, I've seen people
and backspin it that way. And I feel more control than my cornhole shot than ever before. And just like you said, this game is really hard to keep improving on, but that's what drives me, is like finding little ways to like get better at things, like whether it's cornhole or darts or shooting a basketball or like in my golf game, in my golf swing. Like, I'm always, like, to me, that's what drives me, is like trying to get better, like all the results and stuff. And yes, we get to do it for a living and we're playing for a ton of money, which is like amazing. But that's not like, I'm not playing for the money. Like, I really truly love the game and I really want to try and get better at it. And like, and then everything else just comes along with, it's just a byproduct of just getting better. And like, that's kind of how I have always looked at it.
So what have been the little hacks that you've figured out to improve your ball striking? Cause I think that's been the biggest thing that's taken you from, you know, kind of like middle tier tour player to this year, you were in the upper probably sixth of tour players, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the original question I think you were getting at before we went on this like 20-minute sidetrack, but now we're back to the point. So I started working with my coach, Brian Cregan, like a year and a half ago. I had known him. He's at Shooting Star this summer. I told you about Shooting Star this summer. He works at Pine Tree down here. And I had known him for probably 5 years before I started working with him. And I had a couple buddies that were, you know, minor league players or mini tour guys, seeing him down here. And he worked with, you know, some club pro guys like Ben Polland and Jared Hack. And so I went to him just like super lost after, like, I just played the West Coast, just got eaten up by like Torrey and Riv and all these hard ball striker places where like, I just didn't feel like I had much of a, like, I just wasn't hitting it good. I didn't have like a clear thought. I was kind of lost. And I went to, after the West Coast, I went to him. I'm like, I've known you for a while. I've heard you help, you know, these guys, like, I'd like to just come like see you and like talk about things. And like, our first lesson went great. His kind of philosophy is he's very smart with like the anatomy of the body and how the body is supposed to like move and load. And so literally everything we've talked about is like nothing about like what the club is doing, which is crazy because I've never really thought of golf swing like that. Like, I'm literally only focusing on how my body is moving, how I'm engaging my core and how I'm using my foot pressure in the backswing and how I want my have pressure in my feet, but mobility in my ankle to turn, and like things that I like never thought about, but it was a way that was really helpful to me because I'd never thought about it before. It felt simple. He's like very smart, but he dumbs it down to keep it simple for me. And So if I'm able to kind of load the backswing how I want to, I'm then able to kind of get push off, get pressure into the left and kind of turn and swivel. Like when I do this stuff right, I feel powerful and I'm much more efficient with how I'm using my body and I can get more speed with it.
I feel like that's how coaching's changed the most, right? Like when when we were kids, it was like video and here's, you know, your club needs to be out here. And it's like, it's not like now it's more how does the body move to get the club to those positions? Like if the body moves right, the club's going to move the way you want it to move.
Right. Exactly. And I think and right after we did this, you know, I played at like, I finished like 24th at Bay Hill and like that was with shooting four. I shot like four over on Sunday and didn't move. Like I entered the day 23rd and shot four over and finished 24th. Like it played that hard, but like I played well. Like this was the first tournament after seeing him. And then the week later, I was like second to last group of the players going into the weekend. Like I played great. This was there. Here's the hole in one ball. This was like 2 or 3 weeks after working with him, like I was like striping it, like everything felt really good. And then I finished like third at Honda after that. Like I went on like a really good stretch of golf just in working with him in just a short time. Like I had a much clearer picture. And I think I kind of, the stuff that I'm doing like requires, like it's forced me to get in the gym more, honestly, to get my body stronger, bigger, to be able to do like the stuff that we're trying to work on more efficiently. And I found a good program routine, good exercises to help enforce this year, which kind of, you know, I've played all these places. I'm more comfortable with my swing. I'm getting stronger. Like all these things kind of like came together to like start playing some like really good golf. And I think I have a good process of where, you know, I think I can be doing this for a long time and really successfully. So I'm excited about, you know, how these things worked this year. And I'm excited and like continuing to evolve my process, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. How have you changed your scheduling with where you play over the years? Are there places you avoid, places that you know you should go to? Like, is that something that has evolved as you've been on tour?
Yeah. Like Sanderson Farms. I love Sanderson Farms. Like that's a great golf course for me. I will always play that tournament. There's a bunch of tournaments. Like for instance, Torrey Pines. As much as I love Torrey, like I think the property is amazing. I think San Diego is awesome. Probably not the best place for me. One, because you do need to hit it great and it doesn't really favor a great putter. Like I struggled actually the last time I played there a year and a half ago, I struggled with my putting, like more so than I have at any other place. Maybe Monterey Peninsula before you could tap down spike marks. That's the Monterey Peninsula is like my, like, I'm never coming back to this place. And then they changed the spike mark. Well, I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go back and play Pebble. Cause if you play Monterey on the third day and you're last off or something, like I was the year I played it, I'm like, it was like one of the most confidence shattering, like putting experience I've ever had. Like I didn't feel like I could hit the hole from 5 feet at Monterey. And that's kind of what it was like a little mini version of that at Torrey a couple years ago. So I'm out on Torrey for now. Maybe I'll go back there for the US Open or later in my career. I think it just like kind of depends on like most, like there's a definitely a handful of places I have in my mind that I love, like I'm going to go to every year. And then there's like a handful of places, like give or take, like, I mean, everything can change. Like you win a tournament and you have like two really great weeks and you spend a lot of energy. Like you might need a couple weeks off and you might not play that place that you played the year before because you just need like a little time, like you just need some time off from the weeks you just played. I think, and then there's other places where maybe you're not playing great leading up to it and you need a good event and maybe you play a place that you haven't played. To me, it's totally dependent on how you feel, how you've played leading up to it, what kind of decision goes into like
Okay. I played well here last year, but I just played well the last 2 weeks, had two really good weeks. I could go win that tournament or I could use an off week. Like it kind of just depends.
How's this year? You've your career on the PGA Tour has had some interesting periods between COVID and now this year with the LIV drama. How's this year been different on tour with the like kind of LIV speculation?
It's definitely seems like that controls like 80% of the conversation, like anywhere you are. Like if you're not talking about it, you see somebody else at a table that you don't know what they're talking about, but you're like 90% sure those three guys are talking about something related to LIV. Like it's like I've kind of like gotten sick of talking about it the last few months. Like I don't care if these guys go. Like if you're gonna go, like okay, good. Like, I get it. You're making, you got offered a ton of money that was probably hard to turn down. You have a kid or two and like, you're looking to support your family. Like, I totally understand that. I totally get it. They want the financial stability of it. At least like some of them have come out and said that, where like other people have been like, they've like kind of like danced around like what they actually went there for. I'm going to use the money to like grow the game. Like, no, you're like, you got a massive offer and you wanted all that money. Like, just come out and say that. Like Harold, like I liked reading Harold's. Like, I love Harold. It's unfortunate that he's leaving, cause he's a good buddy of mine. And, but like, I at least like his letter is like, I'm going to be real with you. Like I did it to support my family and future generations of my family. And I totally get that. I totally understand it. And I like how he said, like, it's still going to be me. I'm the same me. I still like want to be friends with all you guys, but like, I don't like, as long as these guys, like, I think it's kind of annoying that some of these guys are like, they say these things that they want to play less and they want to play less and they want to be with their families more. And then they go to the LIV Tour and then they want to come play the PGA Tour too. Like, I'm like, you said you wanted to play less. Why do you want to play the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour? You'd be playing way more actually, if you were doing that. So like those, like some people have been kind of talking out both sides of their mouth, which can happen, I guess. I'm staying on the PGA Tour and I'm going to continue to get better and win tournaments, and I want to play in majors and I want to play against the best players in the world. And right now it's still a PGA Tour.
Is there anything appealing? Do you find anything appealing about LIV's system or setup? Is there anything about it that you think is appealing?
I think the team aspect is appealing, but maybe not every week. Like golf is very much an individualized sport outside of a couple events. You got the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. And, you know, those events are very, very appealing to me. I don't know if I'd like want to be part of a team event every week. I mean, I guess it sounds cool. I mean, I don't know. The reason I like golf so much is because it's all like, you can control everything yourself. I guess you can still do that in a team aspect. I don't know. I mean, the team part is cool, but everything else about it just doesn't even see, like, I don't think I'd be able to get up like I would going to a PGA Tour event. Like, I don't think the juices would be flowing as much if I were playing a LIV event, because I know I have a ton of guaranteed money. Even if I don't play that well, I'm still making a ton of money. Like, I don't think the incentive, is that high. Like, I have a very high competitive drive and I think I would lose some of that if that were the case, if I were to go play on the LIV Tour for a team event, relying on my teammates. Like, I'd like to take more accountability myself.
What do you think of as a player, that is not in, right now, not in the top, like, that pip type player, but is, a player that would be kind of in the mix for these elevate, like, how do you feel about the tour's new response with these elevated events? And then, kind of it's almost like, I don't want to use this term, too lightly, but the PGA Tour A and the PGA Tour B type setup that they're moving towards.
Yeah. I mean, I know one thing, it's a good time for me to be playing good golf. I want to be, like I said, I'm very competitive. I want to be playing with the best players of the world, and those guys getting better has only driven me to keep getting better. So, you know, it's definitely interesting. I think if I didn't have as good of a year, I'd be like, man, they're going to play for all that money this year, and I'm not going to get into any of those events. I think it's a good thing that I'm on the other side of that, where I think, I don't know the criteria exactly, but it seems like I'm going to be in a handful of those bigger elevated purse events. And like I said, like, I don't necessarily play this game for the money. I do it for a living, and I'm very grateful for that. But at the same time, like I told you earlier, I'm really just trying to get better. Like I just want to see how good I can get at golf. And it's a good time to do that with the money that we're playing for, with these elevated purses. It's very interesting. I'm sure there's going to be a handful of tour members that don't get into those events are going to be kind of pissed off, but it might motivate them the same way it's motivated me to kind of get their ass into gear, so you do play for those $20 million purses.
Yeah, I think it provides a little bit clearer definition. And I think, like, something that I've kind of been on a kick with is, like, when I look at the top of the Korn Ferry Tour and, you know, the bottom half of the PGA Tour, it's like, what's really the difference? And could there be, you know, a event you alluded to, like the Sanderson, could it morph into more of like a mix between the top Korn Ferry guys and the bottom part of the PGA Tour, where all of a sudden we're starting to blur the lines and it becomes a little bit more like the way other sports operate? Like NBA, you have two-way contracts with players that, you know, if you're not playing a lot on your team and you're a younger guy, you could kind of play back and forth between the G League and the NBA. If it's baseball, you're playing AAA and the major leagues, like you're bouncing back and forth. Your status isn't necessarily locked in for an annual basis. I mean, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that?
I thought it was really cool when the COVID year, whatever year the Korn Ferry played 2 years, the top 10 guys were able to play like the opposite field events. Is that what it was?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So the top 10, I thought that was really cool. And I think they could do more of that, where say you finish, you play four or five events on the Korn Ferry and you've earned, like, you're the top five guys in that. Top five, or that would just be maybe the top five winners, maybe like the top 10 guys in that like 5 week stretch. Say you then have the option, if you want to go play, like you qualify for a tour event or two, like where you're able to play in a couple tour events. I think that would be really cool. Like those guys on the Korn Ferry that are winning those tournaments and finishing towards the top are obviously playing well. Why not throw them into the mix for a tour event or two and see what they can do? What if they just jump right on tour and they win like right away on tour? Like, I think that would be a way to kind of like, there could almost be like not graduate, but you play a couple tour events for those 10 guys. And if they don't earn X amount of points, then they go back to the Korn Ferry. If not, like, you're able to play a couple more tour events. I don't know how that works, but I think it's very interesting. I also don't know, like, these top elevated purses with these top players. Like, I don't know how much, say these fields are only like 40, say some of these fields, they make like 40 or 50 people and there's no cut. Like, do guys really want to watch? Like, what if Rory shoots like 75, 73 the first 2 days, and then he's like in last place and he's forced to play like the weekend? Like, do guys really want to watch that? Are the ratings higher? Like, wouldn't it be higher if you let more people in and somebody you wouldn't think of? Cause the PGA Tour is so deep. I mean, obviously you have the top players, but there's, you know, the 50 through the 125, and even the one, I mean, these guys are no slouches. They have the ability to win tournaments too. Like, wouldn't it be more interesting to throw in like more guys into those fields, so you can maybe have somebody that is mixed in with the top players that somebody wouldn't expect? Like, I feel like ratings are almost higher when that happens. I don't know.
I think one of the big things that with the OWGR change is that bigger fields are advantageous for world ranking points. So I think one of the things that is, you know, obviously a lot of the details on those elevated events are going to come out in the coming weeks, but it's very advantageous for the PGA Tour to make the elevated event fields big, because they will get significantly more world ranking points, which is, you know, what you want. You want the best players on your tour, you know, when they win an elevated point event, to get cashed in, you know. So I think that will be it. I love, the thing that I always think about is like Sungjae Im and Scottie Scheffler. These were guys that spent an entire year on the Korn Ferry Tour. I mean, yep. Im went wire to wire. Scheffler almost went wire to wire as number one. And then they come on tour, and I think Scheffler's first year, he finished fifth in the FedEx Cup. And I think Sungjae, he made it to Eastlake. And it's like, you know, I had spent some time at a couple Korn Ferry events the year Sungjae, I think you were playing Korn Ferry, or no, maybe not.
Yeah, the year he won that money list was my first year on tour, but I finished 126 to 150. I went back to Korn Ferry Finals, and I won the Korn Ferry Finals. Me and him were basically in the same category for my second year on tour. It was his first year on tour.
Yeah, and he, you know, you go down, and it's like everybody's like, this kid's a machine. He's unbelievable. And it's like, yeah. Everybody knew, it's 5 weeks into the Korn Ferry Tour season, that this guy was a bona fide tour player.
Right, just like give him some events out there to see what he can do, and maybe he can just like earn, like he gets to play for more money that year, and he can prove that like he's going to earn his tour card this year as well. Like, I think there's an interesting way, like I think that could work. Like I feel like there could be a system where, like, because like it's really hard to win three times on the, like,
exactly, like that, anywhere.
That promotion is like, that promotion's ridiculous. Like, but by the time somebody wins three times, it's most likely the very end of the year where they don't get any tour starts. Like they might get one or two. Like it should be like, it should be a two, it should maybe make, you should maybe make that like a two win promotion. Or if you hit a certain point threshold by like a certain point in the year or something, like that person should be able to go to the tour. Like if you hit like a 1,000 point threshold where you definitely would have your card locked up, like you should be able to go to the tour or something. I don't know. There's gotta be.
Yeah. I just did the math the other day, cause Pearson Cootie, young kid from Texas, he was number one in the PGA Tour U system. And so he took the Korn Ferry starts, and he did eight starts in the regular season. He finished like 32nd or something. But like if you made his starts a full season, he would have been first or second on the Korn Ferry based off his points per start. And it's, yeah, like, and now he's on the outside looking in at Korn Ferry finals because he's had like a few average weeks, and it's like, this is silly. This is, you know, like, nobody can look at this kid and not be like, hey, he's a PGA Tour, but he might end up on Korn Ferry Tour for an entire year. And it's just like, it's 2022. We don't need to have like an archaic year by year. You know, there can be some movement throughout the year, right? And it's almost right. Like the reshuffle is the same thing on the PGA Tour. Like, why are there specific reshuffle dates? Like, why can't this just be a continuous reshuffle?
Right. I'm with you. I'm with you. And like, he could, you know, he's probably going to get his seven sponsor events, and like, he's going to have a good chance to do something about it. Cause he's going to get some sponsor invites into the fall. If he doesn't get it, he's going to get enough sponsor invites where like, he's probably good enough to top 10 where he can, you know, top 10 in one or two of the starts he gets and snowball into another start. And like, it's probably good enough to do that, but that's like a lot, like you just said, it's kind of ridiculous. Like he might potentially need to spend a whole nother year on Korn Ferry when like he's clearly good enough to be on the PGA Tour.
Yeah. And I think like the discussion goes back to like Liv, where if you want to build loyalty with young, like I loved Rory's comment, and I think it fits with the way you think about professional golf, where he's like, we want to build the tour that if you want to be the best player in the world, this is where you want to play. You know, it kind of like, hey, let's get the best players up as quick as possible.
Yeah. I mean, I'm totally in for that. That only makes the PGA Tour product bigger and better and stronger. Like that only, you know, because the game is just, I don't know what the average age is on the PGA Tour, but it's crazy how many guys, how good some of these college players are. Like literally they could just jump into like a tour event or two and just be like, contending, like they're right there with some of the top guys, like immediately, which is just crazy. It's just, the game of golf is only getting better. It's crazy how deep it really is, because there's so many guys that are trying to play professional golf on so many different platforms. But it's just like, it's crazy how many college kids are just coming out and they're just like ridiculously good and they can be on tour like that.
It's like anything, and it's only going to get, you know, more and more competitive with live in the additional money of the tours is when there's an influx of cash, like Tiger Woods brought an influx of cash to the sport. And whenever cash gets infused into a sport and money, there's a lot of money, the talent pool gets significantly deeper because more people want to play it to, you know, as an avenue. And, you know, you're lucky, you're in there, and you're probably going to be in a lot of these elevated events. I think, like, in terms of PGA Tour, like, there's never been a better time to be like a top 50 PGA Tour player than right now, because, you know, you have, there are a handful of the best players in the world have vacated, and the purses are going up.
I know. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, it's like, it's nice that all these purses are going up. And like, to me, it doesn't really, I know I'm going to be playing for more money, but that really doesn't change my mindset of how I'm going to go about it. Because I believe, at least, I don't know what my world ranking is, but I believe that I'm right there at that top 50 player in the world type player, like where I'm close to kind of getting up to that next notch of guys that were at the tour championship, like that top 30 ish. Like, to me, if you make it to the tour championship, you're a top 30 player in the world. Like you're that caliber type of player where you could be regarded as a top 30 player in the world. It's also like you talked about Rory. Like I got to play with him at the Players this year, and I mean, with everything he dealt with this year, how much he took it upon himself to be like take that role on of being the PGA Tour spokesperson basically and play the golf that he plays, like, incredibly impressive. Like I'm always, you know, he's been a big fan of, I've been a big fan of his for forever. And he's in my locker space area most weeks, McIlroy, McCarthy. So
I didn't think about that.
He's such a cool dude. So I want to congratulate him on winning the FedEx Cup.
Is he going to be your player of the year vote?
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. Scotty obviously had an unbelievable year. Scotty won four times big tournaments and was right there and several other big tournaments, including another major or two. I think Scotty is probably the player of the year, but I looked at something the other day, like Rory's strokes gained were slightly better this year than the year in 2014.
Yeah.
When he won he went on like that ridiculous one. He won Valhalla, WGC, Bridgestone, and then won the British Open, like just rattled off like three monster tournaments that year. Which just shows how like deep professional golf is and how good it is. Like his strokes gained, he still won a couple times this year, but he didn't win a major. And like, it's just, like you said, this is the best time to be on tour. Like this is, I mean, arguably the best the game has ever been in terms of how many guys are at the top of the world, like at the top of their game right now. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it like a guy like Adam Scott, who I think, like, you know, in terms of Adam Scott, he's been a great player for a long time. And he, you know, I think he even admitted maybe on the No Laying Up podcast, like he was playing some of his best golf right before the pandemic. And it's like he had a really good back half of his year. And he's just like, he's like a guy. He's not like one of the guys anymore, but he's playing golf at a level that's probably pretty similar to when he was one of the guys.
And, I know.
You know, and I think that's like the game. It's what you talked about with the instruction. Like the instructions change so much. And I think with I did an interview with Jeff Ogilvy, and he said, you know, he lived through that TrackMan era change, right? Where, and I think he had this great quote that was like, you know, it used to be everybody would walk around the range and say, I think I figured it out. And now it's everybody walks around the range and knows exactly what to do. Like there's no, you know, and I think like that's led. And then with all the youth, I mean, the speed and the youth talent, it's just insane levels right now.
It really is. It's just growing. Like every aspect you just mentioned just keeps growing. And the younger kids' understanding of like how to use the technology, like they know it. They're dialed. Like their numbers are dialed. Like I started to use TrackMan in college a little bit, and I use it now too. I use it a lot for looking at, you know, wedge numbers, short irons, like really dialing in those distances. And then like I still look at numbers for driver and stuff, but I'm not a tech guru, and I'm not like obsessed with the numbers, which mm-hmm. it's like. What I am using it for, it's perfect for me. Like I like to try and keep it as simple as possible. There's some people that are like, they look at all the numbers, like spin loft, dynamic loft, spin out, like all this stuff. I mean, they're studying this stuff to a science, which is they're trying to figure, you know, trying to use it to make them better. But sometimes that can be too much for some people.
Yeah. Well, Denny, thank you so much. I don't want to take up all your time. We'll be looking forward to seeing you next year at more and more big events, and hopefully another career year. And thanks so much, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, Andy.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode was edited by the always great Meg Atkins. Thank you, Meg. As a quick reminder, we have been putting a lot of time and energy into the newsletter. It is free. It is sent every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we've kind of reformatted it. It's a mixture of news and perspective written by everybody on the Fried Egg staff. So to sign up, go to thefriedegg.com and just simply hit the subscribe button there. Enter your email and you'll be in. You'll be getting free golf content every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. Thank you, and we will be back next week with more episodes of the Fried Egg Podcast.